The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louis.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
Welcome, podcast time.
How y'all doing today?
I'm good. I am super nerded out right now because two of my world nerd buttons have been pushed. But have you guys heard about the Hamlet Hail to the Thief happening at the RSC right now?
No.
So the RSC commissioned Tom York from Radiohead.
Oh, yeah, all right. This is very nerdy Scott stuff.
Super nerdy. To reimagine their 2003 album, Hail to the Thief, which was really their most political album, and it was very much aimed at George W. when they released it. So they
Halcyon took, days back then.
Right, right. So they've reimagined it, and they're doing it at the RSC with a live band, a 6-person cast, and it like the reviews have been like, this is must see if you're a theater person. So Michael Shaw Fisher, who is a frequent collaborator of ours
and friend of the pod,
and he's my Radiohead nerd friend and one of my Shakespeare nerd friends, so we literally were on the phone going, we can go and do, both of us in rehearsals for shows right now. We could go see this, sleep on the tube, and be back in 49 hours for only $3,000.
And
Allie, his wife with their new baby, said no.
Well, and Scott, I just want to mention, since you are a theater nerd, they would actually say the tube.
The tube. Get that liquid you going. Absolutely. Anyway.
Well, that is some glorious theater stuff.
Theater stuff.
We should just say hi to everyone and say welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers. I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett. Now, normally Bailey would be with us, but he's in Vermont and he's chugging maple syrup. That's my story.
Thanks a lot, Bailey.
He's trying to ferment maple syrup and just get drunk on maple syrup. He'll hate me after he hears this. And today we have for you an episode featuring the winner of our 2024 Theater Playwright Award, Edward G. Excalibur.
Yes.
Welcome. Edward is a Los Angeles-based, Miami-born Puerto Rican writer. Edward is an alum of the NBC Writers on the Verge and National Hispanic Media Coalition writing programs. He's written episodes for Parcast's Lost Treasure podcast series, Gone. He's worked as a story analyst for Sony Pictures, Amblin Entertainment, Austin Film Festival, and Coverfly. Edward has twice been selected for the Read Latinx Initiative. Welcome. It's
welcome,
great to have
welcome.
You.
How are you doing
Thank
today?
You for having me. I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
We are so stoked to talk with you and to talk about your works. But before we discuss 638, A Comical Assassination of Fidel Castro, which was the winning script of our 2024 Theater Playwright Award at the Hollywood Fringe Festival. And we're also going to discuss one of your other works today. Can you give us a little bit of background on yourself?
Sure. I should say first, rest in peace to Coverfly. I know they're closing down in August, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for the award, of course. I just want to start off by saying that just a huge recognition for our production. We were so happy. We were so honored to get that recognition. Just an amazing cast, amazing production team. Just want to shout them out.
Awesome cast.
It was awesome.
A Muppet made from scratch by my wife in 2 weeks.
Really? Damn.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah. Background about me. I grew up in Miami, Florida. youngest of three, Italian Puerto Rican household, usually the quietest person in the house. Just I found that, to be the to have my voice heard, I had to just put it on the page usually.
Oh, interesting.
So I started writing comic books as a kid, drawing really, crappy drawings. I got into lyrics, I got into poetry in my teenage emo years. I think we all did. And so just getting into writing was after I met my wife, Elizabeth. She's a musical theater actress, and she was going to college at FIU in their BFA program, and she just inspired me to take a playwriting class. Why not? And I thought, oh well, it's during the summer. I'd already graduated, and I figured I'll just, get the extra credits. And the first script I ended up writing was produced the following year in like their summer stock program.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was a huge honor. And then from there, just more playwriting, more one acts, more short films. I started to get into very rudimentary stuff until you read my bio, and that was everything I was going to say. So now I'm just going to go repeat
Sorry,
it.
no, this
Sorry,
is great.
we subverted you.
Totally with you. This is great.
After playwriting, I wanted to take the next step because my true passion was film, was TV. That's what really got me into all this creative stuff, all this narrative stuff. And so I had the choice between going to NYU writing school, the grad school, and AFI, and I just chose AFI. And so from there, I learned what a screenplay was and what a screenplay format was, and that was very difficult.
It's different.
Very different from playwriting. And so from AFI to NHMC to NBC, just to go over it really quickly, it's just more honing the craft, honing the narrative craft. Each script, in my opinion, gets better. And just, I know coming back for 638, coming back to theater after 10 years, that was just some sort of a calling that I think was calling me for at least 9 of those years as I struggled through the screenwriting process. So,
One thing that I always get on my high horse about on this podcast, and it for me, it's always with acting. I always say the best film actors, you always go back and you find out they had theater training or they started off with theater. And to me, it sounds like maybe it works that way with writing as well.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I was thinking about it today, and I was thinking, like, was this Hollywood industry kind of making me think that screenwriting, that playwriting, sorry, was kind of like the gateway to screenwriting, like that screenwriting was the major league or somehow. But really, like, but playwriting, just I don't know. It's there's something about it that I feel so much more free, and I don't know. Like I still find myself, like, I'm working on a new play now. I still find
Awesome.
myself just coming, and it just feels so natural.
Do you, I mean, maybe this is an annoying question for me to ask, but I don't write a whole lot. Do you already have designs on maybe what you want to do with this next piece that you're writing, or?
I have the Playbill article in my mind already. I very much plan ahead. I very much can. I can't write it if I can't visualize it. So yeah, I'm definitely, I guess, contrary to my daily personality, I'm very optimistic when I'm writing it. I'm very, I can very much see it to fruition in my mind as I'm writing it.
That's great.
Do
My
you
God,
find
can you bottle that and sell it to me? Because I'm usually just like, so that's awesome. Good for you.
Do you find that the two going back and forth between screenwriting and playwriting, do they inform each other for you? Or are they, or do you have them sort of sectioned off in two different areas in your head?
It's funny because they all, and I've been dabbling into writing a novel. I've been dabbling into writing movies. I think it's all kind of from the same foundation because the outline is the same. The outline is the same building blocks. But obviously with a screenplay, you have a little bit more freedom in what you can do versus what you can do on a fringe stage or on a normal stage.
Sure.
So I think it has to inform it. I just, I'm still in the process of, now getting back to going back and forth between them. So I'm still learning as I go.
Right. I saw an
Because
interest. Go
sorry, it was
ahead.
so sectioned off for me. It was so like I was a
Right.
playwright, then I was a screenwriter, and now I'm kind of going back and forth.
It was interesting because I recently saw an interview, and I want to think, I think it was Scorsese getting, at a forum and asking questions, and somebody stood up and is like, "Well, what do you think? What's the best way for a young screenwriter to start?" And he was like, "Read plays." He's
Huh.
like, "Read,
Yeah, I
start
remember us
with,"
talking
he's
about this.
like, "dramatic literature." Like that's going to give you a foundation in so many ways and keep things simpler, because when you start writing screenplays, then at least in my experience, you start getting a little bit more technical. Like you start thinking about the size of things and how things are going to work and logistics, and a
Definitely.
play is simpler logistically. Well,
I
sometimes,
mean,
yeah.
reading for Sony and Amblin, like, I definitely take inspiration from the formatting, the structure, the certain ways certain people write, but I don't ever really get narrative help or how can I write a better story from those. I get how can I write this script better, whereas with a play. I mean, my advice would just be to read anything, like read any like any book, any play, any screenplay. But I think, at least for me, I always pride myself on my dialogue, and I think I excel in dialogue just because of all the plays I've read. And I'm not sure if that's what I specifically took away from it, because every play has like a different structure, and the structure is different from screenplay structure. And some plays just kind of end out of nowhere, and those could be frustrating to me. But yeah, I think you take from whatever you take from it what you get.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Scott, you have told that Scorsese thing before, and I love it every time you tell it. I thought about in the middle of it. Who was the writer that you said someone was like, "What's your good secret to writing?" And he's like, "Borrow Shakespeare. It's
Oh yeah,
real pretty
steal.
language and
This is
it's
just it.
free."
Yeah, it's just I can't even remember who that was now. But he was like, "Yeah, just rip off Shakespeare. Like, when in doubt, just go, because this guy's covered, more than likely he's covered whatever ground you're trying to cover, and he's not gonna sue you." So,
He's not gonna sue you. That's fucking great.
I think every writer has some sort of a ripoff of Shakespeare's script in their portfolio.
Absolutely. You should.
Every
Why not?
actor, come on.
Every actor. Let's talk a little bit about 638,
Wait,
because, oh, I'm
before we get
sorry.
to that, I just
Oh.
wanted to say one thing. Here, normally we would ask, "What brought you to theater and playwriting?" But you already answered that question. I just want to say that I love the backstory that your wife encouraged you to give it a shot. Like, that's really, I like that. That's
Yeah.
nice.
And well, and then
Yeah.
and to segue into 638, you both worked on the story together. You both
Yeah.
were
What?
talk about the origins and where it all started.
Please.
I mean, we're a very collaborative couple. We have no issues working with each other. We've done many plays together, many short films. It's always really a joy to work alongside her. Honestly, we knew we wanted to do something for a long time, and we have come up with so many different ideas, so many different mediums, and it just never got started. And then the pandemic happened, and we stalled a lot of things. So amidst the WGA strikes 2 years ago, we're picketing around Disney, and we're discussing a play idea for a very traditional family drama taking place in the backyard, in a Miami backyard, the night that Castro actually died.
Oh, okay.
And it was going to be just like a generational thing of the old guard still can't let go, even though he's gone. Whereas the younger generation was like, it's time to move on. It was going to be very much dealing with that trauma. And so we were both walking around, we were both picketing, we were both, carrying our signs, and we just said to each other, like, I don't want to focus on the trauma. Like, so many Cuban stories, and she's Cuban, I'm Puerto Rican. So many Cuban stories deal with the trauma, and we just wanted to show Cubans for their humor, for their heart, for their hope. And so we just said to ourselves, let's go big. If we're going to do a show, if we're going to put the money into it, if we're going to put the effort into it, let's go and have some fun. Let's have fun. Let's push it as far as we can. And so we're both huge adorers of Mel Brooks and Farce. And so we just thought to ourselves, let's do that. We haven't really seen a Cuban farce. We haven't seen these types of characters, slamming doors or running through exits and entrances. We haven't seen, the spit takes, the slapping, like, and so we just started to escalate each story beat. It's like, how can we further the confusion, further the mix up, further the tension, further the drama? And so slowly it started to come together. And honestly, I mean, it's going to sound annoying to a lot of people, and this doesn't always happen, but the script was really easy to write. It came out, it was really like 2 weeks of writing the actual script. I mean, I credit that to our outline. I credit that to our planning. Everything else, the dialogue, the jokes, it was more like together, my wife and I, we came up with the formula, and then I had to like figure out each puzzle. I'm like, okay, we have this bullet point where this character goes here and does this, but how do they go there? And how do we make it funny? And so it was just a constant set of puzzles for me to figure out, which I do like puzzles. So it was fun. It was really fun to write. And like, I don't usually think what I write is good. And every day after I write, I have about 5 seconds of like, oh, that's really good. But then after that 6 second, I'll think,
Boy, do I
but with
know,
this,
boy, I hear that.
but
An
on
artist
the artistic
self-doubt?
self-doubt,
Yeah,
yes.
yeah. But each day, like, I got to 7 seconds, I got to 10 seconds, I got to 15, and then I just thought, oh, I think I have something here. And I started to show my wife pages, and she was liking it. I'm like, I think we have something here. And then just, when we put the button on it, I'm like, I think this is, and we finished it early December. We submitted it for the Fringe scholarship, and I think it was late December. I forget the deadline for those. And we were already crowdfunding in late January, early Feb. Like, it was really quick. So yeah, it was just a roller coaster to getting that first draft done, really, from the strikes to the end of January.
We should back up just a little bit. Why don't you tell the audience what 638 is, what it
Oh, it was great.
represents, and the full title?
Sure. Well, I mean, I get the title wrong all the time. I was just being a smart ass when I made the title super long. So it's a it's you know what? Let's
Now, I have to tell you, it had been a while since I'd.
You got
Oh, there it is. Read it out there. Do it. Do it. Do it. Go.
the poster. It's 638. Well, you know what? It's redacted, so I don't even know the freaking
Damn
title.
it. I thought when I saw the title, I was like, oh, because I know you just recently did another production of it and you said you'd changed the script a little bit. And I thought, like, oh, maybe he changed the title a little bit. Darn it. Let me see if I can find
No,
it.
I've got it.
Please.
I've got it right here.
Oh, you got it?
It's
Okay, great.
638, an uncommonly comical review of an accidental assassination attempt on Fidel Castro.
Ah,
Yeah.
excellent. So good.
So yeah, the basic log line is it's a not to give anything away, but it follows a family on an evening in 1963, Havana, Cuba. The father of the family is marrying his daughter off into the regime, into the Castro regime, to protect his family, to secure their safety. But when Fidel unexpectedly shows up and wants to enjoy the party, but accidentally is killed by the father's kind of a what's the word?
Rebel? Wasn't he a past
Yeah,
rebel?
rebel, misfit kind of. He inadvertently gets Castro killed, and it leads to Castro is running around the Havana mansion, and hilarity ensues. And obviously, you know, there's a little bit of a twist to it with a narrator taking us through it the entire time, and everything might not be as it seems. So yeah, it's a really fun show, and the expansion was really fun to do as well.
It really, I it just, we've been talking about pushing my buttons, but it really did. Like,
Yeah.
I love historical stuff that is flipped on its head. Like it really reminded me of the death of Stalin. If anybody's
Yeah.
seen the death of Stalin, like
Yeah,
this
that
true
one of our
event,
major inspirations.
right on, right
Oh,
on.
cool.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
awesome. Just this true event, this thing that really happened. These people were, real, and just plugging in insanity, and the stakes are so high. Like, that's what I really reacted to, and maybe that's because I'm kind of a history buff, but like, I'm like, 1963 Cuba, shit's about to go fucking crazy. So like, you literally know at the top that things are gonna go sideways at some point. But then just all of those elements, I felt like all of those characters, the young married couple, that shouldn't be getting married, and that we have that Fidel is a puppet, and
Yes.
it's worked so well. It was such a brilliant, simple, elegant, theatrical choice to make that just lifted the whole thing.
That's all Elizabeth, because obviously you saw in the script it's not meant to be a puppet. But we had an actor cast for Fidel. He was great. He had the intensity. He had the charm too. And he got cast in another play, and he chose to go with the other play at the very last second.
Oh,
So
damn.
no hard feelings.
No,
It's
it's just
just
that's puts you in a rough spot right there. With a very specific role to fill.
And so it was very hard to even find Fidels, like people even applying for Fidel. So I think I was on my computer, and Elizabeth just was like, what if we make him a puppet? And you know, that was the trend of the show, is what if we did this? What if we did this? What if we did this? And it was usually, yeah, let's try it, you know? And so she went to a Google rabbit hole. She went on a Joanne's Odyssey, and more than one. And yeah, like in 2 weeks, she had Pepito 1.0, and we made up this whole persona for the puppet. Like, his name is Pepito. He grew up in Key West. He's a classically trained. His parents thought he got into MIT and were so proud, but it was actually just the Muppets College. So yeah. And
Go ahead,
sorry.
sorry.
No, I was done.
So I told this story to everybody whenever after we saw the show, because we saw it fairly early in the run, didn't we, Scott?
Yeah, it was, we saw very like the late night, like it was like an 11 o'clock start. Like,
So
yeah.
how
That was
many
a fun
what
show.
yes how many applicants did we get? We got like 30 plus applicants last
Yeah,
year, right?
easily. Yeah.
I tried to read every single script, and just reading your script, and I told the guys, I was like, this is a pretty good one. I'm excited to see this one. And then yeah,
Awesome.
Leggett and I went and saw the 11 o'clock
Yeah, that
production of
was
it. But
we bribed you all with free coffee, though. That
No. I mean,
Yeah.
but that was the thing. We had because we were B Scott and I were also doing Best of Broadwater, so we were seeing umpteenth shows last summer.
Yeah.
And it was a Saturday, I think, and I think we had like
Yeah.
it hadn't we seen like four or five
It
other
was,
shows that day.
yeah, it was a long day.
But we were walking into the 11 o'clock, and I remember before walking in, at some point that day, somebody said to me, Fidel Castro is being played by a puppet, and I was like, what? And my first reaction was like, I didn't know how I felt about it. And then went into the show. We were in the front fucking row that night too.
Did you get some vomit splashback?
I can't remember. I don't
No, I don't think so.
but then from top to bottom, loved the entire fucking show. And
Oh, thank you.
the Muppet in and of itself, like elevated it even more, and I liked it by itself. I liked it by itself to begin with, which is why I was initially worried about it, and then totally ate Grow. Like,
Right. Well,
I loved it.
and credit to the performer and to whose name I forget right now. Who was the puppeteer?
Yeah, Eric Solis.
That's it. Yeah, Eric. And Elizabeth, because the staging was so good and it was the commitment of the puppet. Like it wasn't like this joke thing that came out. It was this funny element at first, and then you're like, oh, that, like, I'm kind of worried about the puppet right now. So
It was
yeah.
like watching the Muppet Christmas Carol, and it's so great. But the other reason why it's so great is Michael Caine is acting his balls off with these
Oh
Muppets.
yeah,
Like,
absolutely committed. And so yeah.
and perhaps it's because I was born in the 80s. I was like, oh, that's a fucking
Yeah.
Muppet. I love the Muppets. Like, it pushed a bunch of my nerd buttons as well.
Right.
No, I think everybody in the cast did a great job of not, pointing out the Muppetness of him.
Yeah.
And he's still Fidel Castro. He is still, we pushed him to be just like
Yeah.
a little bit big, a little bit buffoonish to begin with, because we want to save that intense violence towards the end.
Yeah.
And I think everybody did just a fantastic job in the first production, the second production as well, when Fidel was a bit expanded. And yeah, I was actually the skeptic of me and Elizabeth when she was like, let's make him a puppet. Because originally, I believe originally, before all of the actor mishaps and actors dropping out, I kind of wanted all of the Escalante family to be puppets, just to, mimic, how the Castro regime is turning these Cubans into puppets. But that quickly died on the vine. But
That's
no,
awesome.
I was happy that we were still able to get something like this.
Yeah. And then and just to your credit, and to keep, because we'll keep praising the play, I just adored it. But that cast was so amazing, and
Yes.
the funny, and then the heart of it, and then just all of the complexity that came with that moment in history with those group of people in that country at that time. It just really hit. It hit beautifully, I thought.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think so. Last summer, I was in a show that Scott produced called Planet Earth Farewell Concert, and I think it was our last show. I go out on stage for the opening, and I look in house right, house left, and the brilliant actor that played the presenter was sitting like a couple rows back from the
Oh,
front,
Jose?
Jose. And I walked off stage. I was like, you guys, the presenter from 6:30 is on it today. Like, I was so starstruck. It was the best.
I like that as like a Statham vehicle for him, like the presenter. Like that's a good
The presenter, yeah. What a great
No,
idea for a
he
series of movies, like where you just have somebody breaking the fourth wall and then they get carried into some fucking crazy adventures.
I felt so bad for Jose through the rehearsal process, because we didn't really know what to do with the presenter. Like, he was just this character standing off to the side a lot of the times, and he didn't really have any scenes to rehearse with anybody. He had very few interactions, so he was, and his this is his first acting job, his first
No
what?
shit.
dramatic. He's a stand-up comic. This was just something he thought he'd be good for, and he applied, and he was cast like 5 seconds into his audition.
That dude has got a star written all over him. Like, he's
And
just,
listen, you don't see stand-up comics be great on stage, like great in that form. But he was fucking awesome.
We had two as well. Gregory Santos, he played Gonzalo. He's a stand-up as
Oh,
well, and
right. No
he was
shit. Great. I love
yeah.
it. I love it.
Just both of them just have amazing stage presence, amazing timing. But yeah, I felt so bad for Jose throughout the rehearsal process, but it just came together towards the end, and we finally figured out like that he is the backbone of this story. He is just like the linchpin of holding all these characters together. And again, the credit to Liz's amazing directing to just handle a stage of 10 actors
Here,
and one Muppet.
yeah, especially I mean, I love second stage, but that's a small stage for 10 people to be on.
Yeah.
Like, it's
We were thinking about the main stage, but then we thought the main stage might be too big. So it was kind of just, pick your poison, and we made it work.
No, this was great in second. Like, I liked being there and close to the stage too.
Yeah, right on
Yeah,
top of it.
yeah. I think the amount of exits and entrances helped as well. Yeah.
I think
We did
talk
this.
real I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, we did the second run at the Actors Company, and that was
That's what
a
I
nice
was about
space
to
as
ask.
well.
Yeah.
Did
And when
now
did you do
question
that?
that
I'm
was just
sorry?
in February, wasn't it? When you just did the run again?
End of March.
Oh, okay.
Great audiences. I will say, like, it hit a little different, with the world as it is
Sure.
today.
Well, it's
Because
prescient as fuck.
I think last year was more like, ha, this happened once, but it can't happen again. And now it's
Yeah,
like, and it's like, now it's like, how do we get out of here?
yeah. There was a
Exactly.
line, there was an exchange in the script that I had to write down because I was like, damn, this it is hitting differently. I still love the fuck out of it, but it is hitting differently. It's when Candida and Oscar, and they're the couple that their daughter is marrying into the regime, and they're hoping to stay safe. Candida says, "Because this whole shit show is temporary," and Oscar says, "Oh, mi amor, no, it's not. It's not. They're not leaving. This is Cuba now." And that is exactly how I feel about our state of affairs right now.
I was just telling Elizabeth yesterday, like, things might get a little bit better, but America doesn't really have a good track record of getting smarter, so it's not going to get that
God,
much.
no shit.
It's so
It's not
true.
going to get that much better, So I think we're all thinking of our escape plans right now.
Yeah, in some way or another, absolutely. Awesome. Let's wrap up 6:38 and we'll move on. I wanted to say something because you said something earlier that the original idea for this came from you and Elizabeth talking about wanting to show, n not show just the trauma of the Cuban people and to show the joy and all that. And that really comes through in 6:38. It's really, I think it works so well because we're just in love with everybody by the time, we get to the end and we get to all the big reveals and catharsis and all that. So kudos.
Thank you.
I wanted to mention too, rereading it. This is also another thing I talk about on the podcast all the time when we're covering playwrights. There's one thing when you read a play, and there's one thing when you see a play and you love it, but it's another thing when you can also read the script and enjoy reading it. And that's how I felt about rereading this. It reminded me that of that. And then like th there was it's stage directions that nobody sees on stage, but it's definitely there for the reader. Future generations will never know the sacrifices their families made for their livelihood. Their thanks will come in the form of dismissal and a preoccupation for their cell phone, but that's not why we're here. Like, I loved that. And you nobody says that on stage, but you get to enjoy that as the reader. So that's another big thing for me.
That's just for me. Like, I love doing that kind of stuff. It's just to put, it's to put my voice in there a little bit just for
Sure.
readers. And yeah, I do love, and I think there's a lot more throughout this script, especially this script. Somehow, for some reason, this script more than anything else, maybe because the narrator, maybe because it's such a meta script, but I found myself able to do that more.
No, and it's great. And to segue, I think you do it beautifully in the script for Gemini. Like
Oh, thank you.
it's a clear voice telling this
You are
story.
my kind of nerd, Edward. All my shit nerd. Yes. I just loved it. I loved it.
But like, just like, what was the one that really stood out was like, the robot Zeke is like C-3PO, but not for legal reasons. And just that little like, I'm like, but I think that for you as a script writer, as somebody who's trying to sell this, like, I think that's going to make somebody keep reading, go to the next page, if they're doing coverage,
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. Because this is definitely one of my favorites, because it melds my two like ultimate passions, which is Star Wars and video games. Like
Yes, that's all my
that
favorite
is
shit.
shit.
So yeah, I this one was actually a pandemic script, so there might be a little craziness in there just for my isolation here, but
Absolutely. But tell us a little bit about where that came from, and we should say this is a 1 hour pilot
yeah,
script.
one hour one hour dramedy pilot, action adventure dramedy pilot, follows a gamer girl who is, in a dead end life, essentially. Her parents always favored the twin brother who was the MIT genius, not the Muppet College, the actual MIT of this one.
Right.
And so he turned into a mailman for some reason. That was such a it was just beneath his it was so beneath his station that everyone questioned it. But he turns up dead one day, and the sister is mourning, and she finds his mail truck, and it actually morphs into a freaking spaceship, and it takes her to the ISS, the International. It's been so long since I read this. It's basically the Interstellar Messaging and Espionage Program, which is basically what the USPS actually is, and that's why the
Right.
USPS is still around.
Oh, the IPPA?
Yes,
And the
yeah, it's been so
IPPA,
long.
that's it, yeah.
So yeah, I just and she goes on this intergalactic search to find her brother, who's actually very much still alive. And she has to use her video gaming skills to actually help her along her journey, with a robot sidekick, because of course.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
So yeah, this one was just like I was driving down Los Feliz Boulevard one day, and I was looking at a mail truck, and I'm just like, there's more to that truck. There's
There's
more.
something's going on in that
Yeah.
truck.
And so yeah, I kind of wanted to make it like an American Doctor Who sort of.
Yeah.
Well, there's
Just
another
like
one
comp.
for Scott.
Yeah. It's my
I like it. Scott loves
fave. Yeah.
Doctor Who.
I only know the surface of it. I'm still trying to get into it. Every time I want to, me and Liz want to start it, we just don't know where to start.
Oh,
We,
I'll
you know,
tell
I,
you. I
I'm a,
can tell
I'm
you.
a,
Ex
Scott can tell you
I'll
everything you
tell you
need to know.
exactly where you need to start. I can talk you
Which
through this, man.
episode?
I can tell you. I can talk you through it,
I mean, I'm a completionist. So I always want to do the '60s one first and just start from the beginning. But
You don't need to do
yeah,
that.
Leggett told me to start with the reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Because
that's what
it's
I've
a
been
soft
told. Yeah.
reboot, and then they give you all the info. And then as you go,
Okay.
if you really want to go back and check out the big ones, you can. But
Okay.
one of the things that first of all, it's a great teaser.
I was
You have a fantastic
in
teaser. I'm
after
like,
that
man, that's
teaser.
awesome.
Yeah.
And just like and then just the sort of the duh, like her period starting and needing to go to the bathroom in the middle
Yeah.
of a gunfight. I'm like, we've never seen that before. That like it's
Yeah.
such a simple, honest, truthful thing, and like she's just dealing with it and just bap
Yeah.
bap bap bap
Wow, putting a pad in. I
while
just
putting a
loved
pad
it.
in.
Yeah.
I was like, how would this up the stakes if she was putting a tampon in? But that's just me being a bleeder, so.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
Also, anyone that has the nerve to call an evil mother Thunder Cunt She Devil, I'm using Thunder Cunt
yeah.
for the rest of my life now.
Thundercut.
I laugh. As a woman with mommy issues, that made me laugh out loud. I loved it.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites. That's a good one. I should use that more often.
You should.
Have you continued to work on it? Like, do you know where it would go?
Are there more scripts we could read?
If and when picked
No.
up.
You're supposed to have like a series outlook, a season outlook, but I never really get that far with those types of projects. I just want to focus on that pilot, on that original story. I definitely have an idea for the second episode. I definitely want to expand on the characters. I love the anthropomorphic dogs.
Yeah.
I love the planets, the Alpha Ness, I believe his name is, like the robot side character. I would love to explore it further. Like it is constantly the script that I'm still submitting to this day. Whereas other scripts that I equally love, I'm like, it's the time has passed for this, or maybe sometime in the future. But this is the one where if I could get any one of my scripts made, that'd be the one.
How long
Right
ago did
on.
you write it? Did I miss that?
It was in the pandemic. It was either 21 or 20. I think it might have been late 2020.
Everyone had some time to I was not as productive with my time during the pandemic.
No, I learned how to make it. I learned how to make an old fashioned.
I cooked a bunch. I guess that was fine. But creatively productive, not nearly enough.
Yeah, I read a lot.
That's good.
I wrote and I exercised. That's about it.
Yeah. Right.
Damn.
Yeah.
No, I walked a lot. You're just living your life far better than me.
We read Dune during that, CJ. CJ and I read all of the Dune books. All of the any of the expanded stuff, but we did that through pandemic.
I read the first one, and I love sci-fi fantasy, and that one was hard.
It was hard. Oh, it's
They're
a hard
dense
read.
As fuck.
It's dense, and it gets more and more dense as you go.
Yeah.
To talk
and then
too
it
much
jumps
about
5,000 years.
Yeah, it fucks just with you.
Randomly, one book jumps 5,000 years.
I always tell.
Actually,
like,
that's Gemini too. Actually.
Oh, right on.
Oh, really? And that was when I saw sci-fi. I like. Legs and I always nerd out on Dune. My thing about Dune, I started it years ago, and then I got to book four and it broke my brain, and I couldn't pick up any books for years, and then I finally read all of it during quarantine, but we're not talking about that, sorry.
Digressions!
One thing that I had, I mean, there were a lot of things that I liked about it, but one of them... and this is me being totally selfish, but I couldn't help but notice that you write characters that I would kill to play today, but also in my youth. Liz was somebody I would have loved to play as a younger person, and Fontana is totally the character I would play today. I'm pimping myself out now if you ever want an actor for this. But it reminds me, and now I'm going to go into another nerd realm, it reminded me of War of the Rohirrim because it had a younger woman and an older woman, and I'm like, I love these characters so much.
I was so quickly with Liz. Like,
yes.
I'm in, you know, when she's at the arcade hustling arcade games with middle schoolers. Like, it's just like awesome. It's awesome.
She's definitely the character I gravitate towards, like the lovable underdogs, the characters who you underestimate.
Yeah.
That's who I love to write.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Give them somewhere to go, something to fight for.
Like 638, something that grabbed me about it because it was fun from top to bottom and it had all these fun references that I personally loved, but also you get the heartstring tug talking about the brother and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, that was all very sincere and real to me, and it made me emotional reading about it at the top of the play, and then, like, you kind of pin back to it every once in a while, and you know, it just breaks the silly fun, which the silly fun is all fucking great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's
smart. I mean,
and sharp.
I think that's just where I try to find my balance through these heightened worlds, through these irreverent characters, but the sincere storylines, the emotionally sincere storylines.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, that's how it works, you know. Have you watched Andor? Have you caught up on Andor? Yeah.
I'm still behind on it. I'm the worst.
Yeah. Oh my god, it sticks the landing. I was like, how are they going to do it? Where are they going to put it? And like,
I was telling Liz, we were watching the last episode, and minor spoilers, although it has nothing to do with any storyline. But she always jokes that she can hear the melody from Sunday in the Park, and that makes her start to cry. And so I turned.
I love that.
I turned to her and I said, like, your Sunday in the Park is my orange jumpsuit and an X-Wing. Because I start to tear up seeing that, like, towards the end. That final montage.
Yeah.
I loved Andor. Like, I treat Star Wars kind of like a buffet. Like, every plate's different. Some might not be as good as others. Some might be better.
That's a good way to think of it.
Yeah.
I'm happy to take them all as separate entities. Like, when you try to put everything together, it starts to like break your brain a little bit.
But, yeah.
Taking it as like, I am watching Andor now, I'm going to focus on Andor. It may connect to other things, but I'm going to enjoy Andor. I think it's such a better way to watch Star Wars or read Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm an eternal nerd. If you ever want to sit down and talk Star Wars, I will talk your fucking ear off.
I'm trying to read through the EU right now. Like, I've been.
Oof. I abandoned ship a while back.
I'm embarrassed to say, what's the EU? This is
the extended universe.
Oh, okay. I've read one Ahsoka Tano book because I love Ahsoka Tano is my favorite character.
Yeah, no, I think that's my wife's as well, along with like Leia. But she cosplays as Ahsoka sometimes.
Oh, God damn it! That sounds so cool.
Yeah, I'm like 30 books into the EU. So
yeah, dude.
Well.
Respect. I read the Timothy Zahn trilogy, the Heir to the Empire trilogy, and I've read
I started out of order, and I'm like, let me just start from the beginning and go one by one. So I just got past the Clone Wars.
Okay, wow. Right on. Have you done any of the High Republic stuff?
No, I'm focusing on pre-Disney right now.
Gotcha.
I don't want to get the timelines confused.
Yeah, because then it gets to be a mess. Right on. Well, why don't we go to sort of our wrap-up question.
Can I mention one more thing about
Please.
Gemini?
Please. Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
To me, Gemini kind of reminded me of watching Guardians of the Galaxy, except you're not stuck with a fucking asshole like Chris Pratt. God, do I hate that guy. And it's galling because he's great as the character.
I mean, the way things are going, he still might get cast as Liz if this gets made.
When you have to bow to the Trump regime that's going to be in power 30 years from now.
No, he just gets cast in everything anymore.
It's just like, come on.
Mario, great. Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Match.
Yeah.
Garfield, why not?
Jesus Christ. Okay.
So final questions. CJ, do you want
to
start?
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a favorite playwright or a theater artist that, do you have anyone that inspires you in that direction?
I mean, there's so many, you know, it's always hard to pick one. If I had a gun to my head, well, yeah, I think Tracy Letts is the biggest writing inspiration.
Oh, good. I love me some good Tracy one. Letts.
Yeah.
So obviously, August Osage is one of my favorites. Man from Nebraska, I really loved. I love Annie Baker's stuff. I love
you're hitting all of our playwright shit here.
Nilo Cruz, Christopher Diaz are really good. Big Gyrgis fans. Stephen Ali Gyrgis.
Right.
Sam Hunter, I love The Whale. That's one of my favorites. The movie wasn't my favorite, but the script is so.
I didn't realize that was a play before. I gotta read that play.
Yeah.
And
the Brendan
and
Fraser
years
of it
before,
all keeps me from the movie.
That play had been around for 20 years.
Was it Brendan Fraser? Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But that play had been around for 20 years.
I laughed every time he shows up. I laughed for a long time when he showed up in Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
Killer of the Flower Moon, because I was like, what's he doing in the fifth act?
Yeah, right.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
No,
that definitely was the fifth act of that movie.
Yeah, right.
It's a long movie. I still enjoyed it, but
I got through the whole thing. I didn't get up to pee.
And I pee multiple times all the time.
Edward, what would be your absolute dream writing job?
Dream writing job? I mean, Star Wars, obviously a show or a movie or even a book or a comic book, anything. Just, I always tell Liz, like, if I could see my name in those blue letters,
yeah,
I'm good to go.
Yeah.
I can leave this city. and go tend a farm and I'd be happy.
Yeah.
I could get hit by a bus the next day and I
Mike
would be great.
Mic drop. Oh, that'd be great to write a Star Wars thing and then just go off to a little farm.
And that would well. That isn't exactly what George Lucas did. He does own a ranch, though, right?
He owns a very big ranch, yes.
He kind of did.
I mean,
that.
It's just like, it's the reason, like, I'm out here. I was watching the bonus features of, like, the episode 1, 2, and 3 and 4, 5, and 6, behind the scenes. I'm seeing all this puppet work, this artwork, and I know I can't do that. I'm not good at that stuff. The only thing I knew I could do was be the George Lucas in that room, which is the creative, the idea guy.
Yeah.
So I think that's really what drove me just to start writing.
Hmm.
Right on. Yeah, that would be awesome.
So that'd be a dream project.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Is there anything you want to plug? You got anything coming up? What's next?
I know we're trying to get a filmed version of the new 638 together. We have it filmed, we just have to edit it, and that should be available for purchase eventually.
Right on.
Awesome.
So yeah, I'll check social media for that at
Keep us
638
updated
play.
too. We'll crow about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And yeah, just working on a new play that I'm super excited about. I think we're gonna bring it to Fringe next year, and it's only two actors, it's not 10, so
Do you want to tell
that's
us
gonna be
anything about
nice.
that script or keep it?
I think it's another one where there might be a twist at the end to what you're seeing, but it does it's a couple reflecting on 17 years of the relationship via their text message chain. So it's just going to be going through videos and GIFs and text back and forth with the two characters on stage reacting and discussing and fighting and going through those 17 years and figuring out why exactly they're seeing this train right now.
Right on, right on. I dig it. I dig it. I'm
Well, please
excited. I'm
always keep
excited.
us updated on what you're working on, where
Yeah,
you're going to
just
be.
message
Because
us and
we
we'll
love keeping in touch.
gladly.
We love coming seeing your stuff. Hell, if you ever want to send me a script that you want eyeballs on, I love doing that
Definitely.
shit. So please,
Definitely.
Yeah.
anytime.
Definitely.
I also just want to
Always.
say, oh, go ahead.
No, always open to feedback. I'm
Great.
always looking for eyes,
I'm
so.
just always down to read people's stuff. I also just want to mention, while this is not going to be posted on May 16th, it is the day that we're recording. It is also the day that the posting went up for the submission. People can now submit for the Fringe 2025 Theater
Yeah,
Playwright Award. It will be our
theater.
fourth annual.
Fourth, yeah.
And I'm
Wow.
already getting
Awesome.
submissions. So
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
great.
Here we go.
Here we go.
That's great.
Cool. Well, unless, do we have anything else we want to discuss or cover or?
Nothing. I'll plug my two Fringe shows
Please
that are
do.
coming up.
Speaking of Fringe.
I'm producing for Sacred Fools two shows. The first one is called Ms. Edwards. Written by Sydney Edwards and Byron Cooley. It's a one-woman show about a young black woman seeking advice from all the women in her life. And both of her grandmothers were also named Edwards. And it's just a beautiful story. And if you're a 90s kid, there's a couple of really fantastic nostalgia pulls that I was like I was up dancing. So it was cool. So I'm producing that. Ms. Edwards is the name. And then I'm also producing and acting in a drama called a very dark dramedy called Family Fries, which is written by Pamela Quinn Eberhard, who's one of our frequent collaborators. And it's dark and funny and a little fucked up. So
Yeah,
this is
I
a
can't
lot.
wait to see both of those. I'm so
Well, thank
excited
you.
because I
Thank
know
you.
they're gonna just fucking kill.
Well, let's hope.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us with Edward G. Excalibur, the Hollywood Fringe 2024 Theater Playwright winner. Did I already say winner? He won for
Yes.
638. Coming up on the pod, we are finally going to cover what we were supposed to cover back in August. It's a Bailey pick, and it is the movie Synecdoche, which is incredibly fucking hard to say.
It
But
is,
that'll
yeah.
be our next thing. Follow us on all of the socials, and also follow Edward on Instagram at Edward Excalibur or at 638 Play. 638 Play.
Yes. And a big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song and all of our stingers. And Ryan is a hell of a human being, a
Sure
great
is.
person. Also, a shout out to Pam, who is going to be one of our voters this year for the Theater Award. And yeah, that's it. Edward, it was such a pleasure to speak with you.
What
Like,
a
it was really,
great
yeah,
time I
it was a great
had.
time. Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right.
Anytime.
Well, that's it.
Y'all, please rate, review, and subscribe, even if you are American Woman USA that hates our podcast. We want your stars or
Here,
lack thereof, and we want your reviews, even if they're bitchy
here.
and snarky.
Later, everybody.
Great. Take care.
The theater.
Theater.